W-E-T-E-N-P-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Nope. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
We got a great one today, you know, for a change, because the great Catherine Rampell, Washington Post columnist on matters of economic, returns for her third visit to the podcast, and she discusses a number of matters that make me feel a little bit more optimistic about the election that will soon be upon us. First of all, we discuss her recent column about how Americans are beginning to feel better about our economy because the economy is, in fact, doing quite well these days. Folks' pay increasing faster than inflation, which is coming down toward the 2% range, which we normally expect in this country, and interest rates coming down as well. And then, of course, we have so many top officials of Donald Trump's first administration publicly coming forward and confiding what a fascist goon their former boss is. Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff during Trump's term, told Bob Woodward that Trump is, quote, fascist to the core, fascist to the core. John Kelly, who was Trump's chief of staff longer than any other, said recently,
the former president is in the far right area. He's certainly an authoritarian. Admires people who are dictators. He has said that. So he certainly falls into the general definition of fascist, for sure.
Kelly also said that Trump would repeatedly say that he wanted his generals to be more like Hitler's generals. What Kelly didn't tell Trump is that Hitler's generals attempted to murder the Fuhrer on a number of occasions. We are at a very weird place in our history. We're just a week out from a presidential election that one of the two presidential candidates is just such a goon. And yet there is a 50-50 chance that he will be our next president. I'm not sure whether to laugh or throw up. Ha 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 ha. See, it's all very funny. And we got a great one today. Catherine Rampell from the Washington Post joins me for a great one, you know, for a change.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Nope. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th.
With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
So I want to talk about economics because that's for the economy more than economics. That's your expertise. And I'm going to focus on a couple of columns that you've written of late on October 8th. Why Trump is losing his edge among voters on the economy. Is that really true? I read that and I went, oh, please be true.
Well, in the polling that I had looked at in the few weeks before writing that column, it was the case that Trump was still generally leading on the economy. If you ask people in the abstract,
right,
you trust more on the economy or on inflation, prices, those kinds of things. But the advantage that he had was shrinking. So I think it had gone from like 12 percentage points when Biden was on the ticket months and months ago, what
right.
feels like years ago at this point,
yeah,
to about half of that. The occasional poll showed that Trump and Harris were neck and neck on economic issues or on inflation and prices, but those are probably outliers. So it, at least that, as of then, it, that was the case. I don't know if there have been more recent polls since then.
Okay.
But I can tell you why I think it would make sense, at the very least,
sure,
that his advantage would be shrinking. And that's, well, it's a few things. So one is that I think Trump has not done himself any favors with his actual economic agenda to the extent that people know what it is.
Right.
For example, his universal tariffs would actually increase costs for consumers.
It's insane.
It is totally insane.
Can I read a characterization of his, and this is Heather Cox Richardson, so she might not be fair. Former President Trump's closing argument for the American people is that putting a high tariff wall around the country will bring in so much foreign money that it will fund domestic programs and bring down the deficit, enabling massive tax cuts for the wealthy and corporations. She's just being unfair.
I think she's being more generous than she needs to be. I would say, Trump's closing argument to me sounds like Arnold Palmer is well hung, Hitler's Nazis were awesome and totally loyal, and he wants them for
Hitler's generals.
Excuse me, Hitler's generals. Yes, excuse
yeah,
me.
Yeah, they were Nazis, I think.
I would hope.
Well, I don't know. They're in the military. Maybe they didn't take party affiliations unless yeah. you're in the SS or something like
maybe.
That. Then you did.
In any event, yes. If you're exclusively
yeah, we
looking
go down the dark hole.
Yes. If you are looking at what Trump has actually said about the economy when he can remember to talk about the economy.
Right.
He basically talks about tariffs, and he has in fact said that his tariffs would replace all other taxes in the economy, which arithmetically does not make any sense.
Well, it completely makes no sense, because if we put a tariff on Chinese televisions, we pay the tariff. In other words, who's ever importing the TV, if it's Best Buy, right? and they buy 100 or 1,000 TVs, Chinese TVs, and they're $500 a piece, and there's a 20% tariff on it.
There's a $100 tariff on each one.
That has to be paid by the person importing.
Regardless of who, by statute, actually pays the money, cuts the check or whatever, the additional cost of those tariffs was being passed on to downstream American businesses and consumers, right?
Like that's right. That's who's paying for it, though.
Right.
It's not the Chinese.
Right. It is absolutely not the Chinese.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes. So Trump is claiming, if you can try to construct something coherent out of his worldview, he is basically claiming that despite all of that evidence,
despite the way things work.
Yes, despite reality, that China would pay the tariffs, and I guess the rest of the world too, because he not only would tariff Chinese goods, but everybody's goods. Right. Everybody else would get stuck with the cost of funding our government, which is just not true. And even if it were true, it's not enough money coming in to, regardless of who ultimately is bearing the cost of those taxes, because tariffs are taxes. Whoever is paying those import taxes.
It's Best Buy. It's Best Buy if Best Buy is importing Chinese
TV.
Well,
or Best Buy's customers.
And then they pass on the extra cost to the customer, but maybe not. Maybe they can't sell them if that's it. And
yes.
Part of this is putting up high tariffs as a way of saying, no, China, you're not going to sell TVs in our, we're punishing you for putting tariffs on our stuff. I mean, that's another way of doing
it. Or like everything everyone buys at Walmart, for example. And if you look actually at who paid the tariffs before, who would likely pay the tariffs next time around, it is disproportionately lower income people, right? Because they spend
a higher percentage of their money on actual stuff they need to buy.
Yes. And on goods in particular, which is what we're talking about. Yeah. So this would be... none of it makes sense. It doesn't add up in terms of the budget deficit. It doesn't make sense in terms of like who's paying for it and who bears the cost. Like I said, there have been a bunch of attempts to kind of model what this would mean for different households if he actually put these tariffs in place, like the Peterson Institute, which is a think tank in D.C. They had come to an estimate, I think, that Trump's initial plan, 10% global tariff, 50 or 60% tariff on Chinese goods would raise effectively taxes by something like $1,700 for the typical household. And the numbers relative to income are like way worse the poorer you are. And even if you did all of the other tax cuts that Trump was proposing at the time, almost everyone in America would still come out behind, like if you reduce the top tax rate and whatever else. Now, of course, Trump is further expounding upon it and saying, like, let's just get rid of every tax except for tariffs, where it would still make no sense.
But he's acting as if the Chinese pay the tariffs.
Correct.
And it's the opposite. And
yes.
The Americans pay the tariff. And that's his main economic policy.
Well, that and deporting 10 or 20 million people, which would also have an effect on the economy.
You think?
And politicizing the Federal Reserve, which would make inflation worse, all that stuff. So going back to your original question, like why could Trump be losing some of his margin on the economy? It's partly that he like actually has bad economic ideas. Now, whether like the American public absorbs that, I don't know. I think they've probably heard about his tariffs and have heard Kamala Harris correctly characterize them as effectively a national sales tax of a sort. So some of that may have penetrated the disengaged voter's brain. I think Kamala Harris, has maybe done a slightly better job than Biden in how she talks about cost of living and prices. I think the other main thing that has helped her, or at least hurt her less, is that the economy is really damn good.
Talk about that. In what metrics?
Almost all of the standard metrics that you would use when you're saying is an economy good or bad. Mm-hmm. So very low unemployment, strong GDP growth, Even inflation has cooled a lot, and we're basically a stone's throw away from where the Fed wants it to be.
Which is 2%.
Now we're 2 point something. I mean, it depends on what version of an inflation metric you look at. So all those things, you know, generally quite good. With inflation, you know, still more work to be done. And we look really good relative to other countries. We look really good relative to where forecasters thought we would be when they were asked before the pandemic. Like if you look at where the Congressional Budget Office thought the economy would be in terms of how big GDP would be or how many jobs we would have, we're actually doing better than they had thought we would be doing at this point when they were asked back in, I think, January 2020. Not that Americans care about all of those counterfactuals, but we are doing quite well. People are obviously still very pissed off about the price growth that we already saw, meaning 2022, 2023, prices did go up a lot.
22, the peak, right? 9.1% one month.
Yeah, I think that was in 2022. It 9.1% year over year, not month over month.
Not that month. Not that month, no.
Right. And so that has come down. And I think people are still understandably pissed off because they think prices should go back to what they were, which is not how prices work. No. I think it's not intuitive. So, to be fair to people, it's just that the price level basically always goes up. It's just a question of how quickly does it increase, which economists get. It's like totally obvious to economists, but it is not obvious to the, you know, normie person, understandably. They go to the grocery store and they're like, how come, you know, milk was a buck or two cheaper a few years ago? How come meat was, you know, a buck or two cheaper per pound a few years ago? The memory of lower prices is still fresh enough in their brain.
Mm-hmm.
They've still been experiencing sticker shock, right? So even if prices haven't continued to go up that much, it's recent enough that they remember what prices used to be. Whereas, as I said, prices always generally trend upward over time, but people have time to acclimate to them. Like meat was even cheaper 10 or 20 years ago. Same thing with milk, same thing with butter. Like almost all of the groceries that you buy were probably much cheaper in the past, but you had time to get used to it. So I think at this point, people are getting more acclimated. They're less likely to experience sticker shock, and their wages have been outrunning inflation for over a year now. Wage growth has been better than inflation.
And employment is higher too.
And employment, yes, more people have jobs. So all of which is to say, I don't think the economy is ever going to be like a winning issue per se for Kamala Harris, but I think it'll be less of a drag for her because it is good. Maybe because people are, even if they don't necessarily feel that it's good, at least they don't feel it's as sucky as it was. So I think that's all of that is built in there.
Now she says that she's going to go after price gouging.
Yeah.
How do you do that? How does that work? I don't. Is that an actual thing?
No. Well, it depends. There is a bill that Elizabeth Warren and Bob Casey are sort of the leaders on today in the Senate. These are two senators, and that Warren has basically introduced every year for the past few or every new Congress for, you know, for the past however many years, including with Kamala Harris as a co-sponsor when she was still in the Senate. And that's like the Anti-Price Gouging Act. I forget the official name for it. And the way that that would work is effectively price controls, that the Federal Trade Commission gets to use whatever definition it wants to determine that big companies are raising prices excessively.
And who determines that?
The FTC, by any metric they want to, I believe is what the legislation says. I don't have it in front of me, but it's something like that. It's like very vague. They just get to decide you raise prices too much. And I think they need the pretense of some sort of like national emergency, but a national emergency can be declared for any reason by the president effectively. I mean, as the legislation is written anyway. So if this bill were to become law and to be candid, I do not think it would. I don't think it could get 60 votes. But if it were to become law, it would be a terrible idea. Versions of this kind of policy have been tried in lots of other countries, and it does not end up well. When you know, the bill never says the words price control. So the people who like it are like, why would you characterize it as having price controls? But that is what it does. That is what it is, in even if not in name.
Did Nixon put on price controls?
Oh, people forget. Nixon put in wage and price controls. Mm-hmm. So not only did he say you can't raise prices, but he also said you can't give people raises. So people forget that. But yeah, generally, it was not a good idea then. It did not work, to be clear. But at least it was more consistent. I mean, what ultimately mattered was that the Fed came in and reestablished what they call credibility, which basically means like they're actually going to do things that are often politically very painful, economically and financially very painful in the near term, to convince everyone that they should stop raising prices. Because like at some point, inflation becomes self-perpetuating because people are like, well, I'm afraid my suppliers are going to raise prices, so I better raise prices just in case. I better ask my employer for a wage increase because I see all the prices around me rising. And this is what happens in a lot of more basket case type, economically basket case type countries. You know, Venezuela, Argentina. Right.
That's frightening, that stuff.
Yes, that's bad. So Volcker came in, reestablished Fed credibility, raised interest rate, jacked them up, caused a very painful recession, actually back-to-back recessions, but he did...
It hurt Carter, obviously.
Yes, it hurt Carter, but it did bestow this gift of greater credibility upon the Fed for the next few decades that, like, people knew if the economy got too hot, the Fed was going to take the punch bowl away. That's the expression. Like, they're going to say, we're going to end the party. And so those expectations of price changes matter.
The timing was such that it was kind of morning in America by just the right time for Reagan.
Yeah. As an aside, if you look at what the economy looked like when Reagan made the Morning in America speech, it was worse on basically every metric. Inflation was much higher. Unemployment was much higher. So things were, I guess, taking a turn, mm-hmm. but they were still bad.
Directionally going the right way.
And as an aside, you know, all of that credibility that Volcker built up and that has helped the Fed do its job in the year since, Trump wants to destroy by, again, politicizing the Fed as Nixon did and other prior presidents, but mostly Nixon, LBJ as well.
How did they do that? And how would Trump do that?
They basically leaned on the Fed to keep monetary policy looser, to keep interest rates lower, so that the economy would like get juiced a little bit more in time for an election. Mm-hmm. Or their re-election campaigns. So LBJ's famous comment on this is, LBJ says to the then chairman of the Fed, Martin, my boys are dying in Vietnam and you won't print the money I need. So the history of presidents leaning on the Federal Reserve to lower interest rates, to effectively print more money, is not a great one.
But this Fed is behaving responsibly.
Yes, yes. This Fed safeguards its political independence. And Biden, as much as I've been critical of the Biden administration on a bunch of their policies related to inflation, but I think the thing that they have done best is that they have stayed out of the Fed's way. They're asked about interest rates or the Federal Reserve, they say, we're staying out of it. We respect their independence.
Well, then what was your criticism? Biden. Yeah. Your criticism?
I think so.
Okay.
He kept the Trump tariffs in place, for example. That would have been an easy way to at least have a one-time decrease in prices.
Right.
And he had been very critical of the Trump tariffs. I've been supportive of certain things. I've been critical of certain things. I think among the best things that they did and could have done on inflation was respect the Fed's independence, which they did. Other things that they could have done, I think that they either dragged their feet on or whatever. But I mean, most of this is like water under the bridge at this point because, again, inflation has come down quite a lot.
Now, you said there's a soft landing. Look like there's a soft landing. What does that mean when you hear that, that term?
Soft landing generally means that we escaped a bout of inflation without falling into recession. So usually in American history, when we've had a period of high price growth, high inflation, the Fed has had to do some version of what Volcker did and raise interest rates. And like,
we've seen that. We've seen that in this cycle.
They did raise interest rates, not as much as Volcker did, but they did raise interest rates. But usually the goal of raising the interest rates is to sort of cool demand, like make people, maybe they're not going to buy quite as much car, or, you know, because interest rates have to do with loans. Maybe they're not going to buy quite as many cars, or they're not going to spend quite as much on their credit cards, or maybe they won't. The housing market is screwed up for all sorts of reasons, but in theory, like maybe that'll cool demand for housing. But it's really hard to get the dosage exactly right for interest rates. Like, you want to cool demand, but not totally kill it. And that's hard because they have this very blunt instrument or medicine or whatever analogy you want to use. So historically, when they've raised interest rates, they haven't been able to get it calibrated just so that they squeeze the inflation out of the economy without causing a recession. Usually they've caused a recession. Not because they wanted to cause a recession, but it's just like, it's like chemo or something, right? Like, it has these bad side effects, but sometimes you need to use this medication in order to target the illness.
Right.
So historically that's been the case. And this is why a year or so ago, it was a relatively widespread forecast among Wall Street economists
that we'd have a recession.
Yes, that we would have a recession. I think that there was this perception among a lot of Democrats that people were forecasting recession solely to hurt Biden, you know, to bring more doom and gloom to the country. But that's not the case. I mean, I'm sure there are some people who felt that way. Some Republicans, maybe, who are wishing for bad economic outcomes. But people who are paid to get forecasts right were saying that they thought a recession was
happening. But instead, we're having a soft landing, which means that didn't happen.
Right. Or it looks that way. I mean, I don't think we're completely resolved. There's still some inflation to squeeze out of the economy. Things could take a turn for the worse. So I don't want to suggest that it's like 100% a done deal. But right now, the typical Wall Street economist is not forecasting a recession in the next year. So that's good. And again, I think that is largely a credit to the Federal Reserve.
And Rubio said they're fake statistics.
Oh, God. Yes. So this is not the first time this has happened, but when the last jobs report came out, it was really spectacularly good. It was like way better than anybody had expected. And again, totally different universe from all of those fears about a recession that we heard not very long ago. And the news was so good that people like Marco Rubio said it had to be fake. And look, it is true that these numbers are subject to error, and, you know, like, how many jobs there are is based on surveys of employers and stuff gets revised, whatever. I'm not saying that it's like totally perfect, but it's not like somebody was cooking the books here,
right?
Which is what the allegation was. And you may remember that similar accusations, you know, crazy conspiracy theories, I would say, about fake numbers were around, like, I think it was in 2012, Obama was running for re-election. Jack Welch made a similar comment about how I think at the time the unemployment rate had fallen, and Jack Welch said that it was, you know, it was fake news, effectively.
CEO of GE.
Yeah. So this is not
bastard.
This is not a new play from these guys, but it's bad and it's unhelpful. And I'm all for making our government statistics more robust, but saying that they're fake or whatever, I think, is really harmful.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Catherine Rampell.
Legend.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Okay, let's talk about Mona Hahn. She is a pediatrician in Flint.
Yes, she's awesome. She is a pediatrician in Flint, Michigan. If her name possibly sounds familiar to people out there, it's that she had a relatively high profile, like a decade ago, national profile, because she is the person whose research basically revealed the Flint water crisis. She's a pediatrician, she's a public health researcher, she's on the faculty of Michigan State University, and she had used basically administrative data, health records, to determine that the lead levels in kids were much higher in Flint. So that's what she was known for then, but she's like a force of nature, very charismatic. Everybody in town knows her as Dr. Mona, and she gives everybody a big hug everywhere she goes and every kid a high five. Like, she's, you know, a really like charismatic, capable local community leader. And when I talked with her recently, she was telling me that basically the reason she got into public health, in addition to actually treating patients as their pediatrician, was that she was always very frustrated that she was limited by how much she could actually improve the health of patients whose well-being was affected by so many other things related to poverty, essentially, because Flint is a very low income place. And so she would see kids who didn't have adequate nutrition, who had breathing problems or all sorts of other things that, like, honestly, a bit of cash could have gotten them into a better situation, a better housing situation, less tumultuous home life because their parents wouldn't be as stressed, better access to nutrition, all those things. And so the way she put it to me was she said she always just wished she had something in her doctor's bag to prescribe away poverty. And that is essentially what she sought out to do in Flint, Michigan. There was a grant opportunity that came up. She decided that she wanted to give every family with a newborn cash that they could use however they see fit, you know, no strings attached. So they, if in theory, if they wanted to, yeah, they could go out and buy a flat screen TV. But in practice, like, babies are damn expensive. And when I interviewed a lot of the moms in the area, because I went to Flint and visited and talked with a lot of the families.
And sometimes one of the parents can't work.
Yes. Right. It's, well,
your income can go down because,
yes,
of that.
Actually, as Dr. Mona put it, the period around the birth of a child is often the period of the lowest household earnings that a family experiences, because mom probably has to take some time off after the birth and it may not be paid. There, you know, we don't have universal paid leave. Maybe she had taken some time, you know, cut back her hours late in her pregnancy too. There may or may not be another partner who's contributing household income. This is a time when families have like the fewest resources and the greatest expenses, right? They have to buy a car seat and a stroller and diapers and wipes and bottles and formula, onesies and everything you can imagine. Babies need a lot of shit, is how she put it. I couldn't get that quote in my article, but that was a very succinct way of putting it.
Can't use an asterisk and just.
I tried, but I was.
Oh, wow. The Washington Post. Huh?
I know. In any event, she basically came up with this program to give every family $6,000 in the year following a newborn's birth, you know, $500 a month for 12 months, as well as eligibility for a $1,500 cash payment at 20 weeks of gestation. So that like mothers could get access to a better housing and nutrition and whatever before then. Kamala Harris's version of this proposal doesn't include the prenatal cash grant, but it does include the $6,000.
That's $1,500?
In total, new parents in Flint are eligible for $1,500 during pregnancy at 20 weeks, and then $6,000 in the year after, so total $7,500. And it's early days for this program. It only began in January. You know, we'll have to see what the full effects are. And Dr. Hannah and another researcher at University of Michigan, Luke Schaefer, have kind of constructed a control group to look at what happens to the families who get the money versus like people just outside of the city of Flint who deliver at the same hospitals and stuff like that who are not eligible for the money. And they're tracking what changes in these families, what they can measure. And there are a few things that are very promising so far. So, for example, the families that get the cash have much lower rates of very low birth weight babies, which is a good thing.
Less smoking, they're, I saw.
Yeah, less smoking in the third trimester. What looks like better nutrition and better housing security. Actually, there were no evictions for the population that got the cash, whereas the control groups, the comparison groups that didn't get the cash, I think it was like, depending on the group, it was like 3-8% eviction rate. And then in softer measures, like they surveyed both groups about, do you feel loved? Do you feel respected? Do you have hope? And those who got the cash were much more likely to say yes. And you can say, oh, that's like warm and fuzzy, but who cares? But part of the goal of this program is not just to address people's material needs, which are many when a baby is born, but also to provide sort of a better sense of well-being. And Dr. Mona talks about it as like reimagining the social contract that Flint in particular is a place where people do not trust government. They do not trust, understandably, there was lead in the water, do not trust the health institutions there. And they want to sort of create greater sense of community, greater sense in public trust and greater feelings of being loved, you know, and supported by their community. And all of that is part of it.
So is this going to be expanded, you think, after this year?
So it's already being expanded across Michigan. Governor Gretchen Whitmer, the Democratic governor of Michigan, has kicked in money to expand it to Kalamazoo and a couple of other places, including a relatively conservative area in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. So it's already expanding across Michigan. The real question is, could it work at the national level? As I said, this was sort of the model for Kamala Harris's baby bonus. Her version would work by expanding the existing child tax credit, which has been around for decades, has been bipartisan for most of that period, although is more politicized now. And that's just like recognizing that people who have kids like have more expenses and you should probably give them lower taxes.
And the evidence on those, that kind of thing is there, right?
Investment in kids has a very big payoff. Now, the question is, how similar is the population in Flint to the general population, right? And as I said, Flint is very low income. They have either the highest or one of the highest child poverty rates in the country. The child tax credit is available to almost every family. So in Flint, it's available to every family. You know,
right.
There's no means testing.
You don't have
testing.
To take a means test, right?
Right. But in practice, most people are like low income or lower middle income. If we're talking about the child tax credit, that would be, as it is conceived by Kamala Harris, and as it exists now, for that matter, that would be available to people making $400,000 or whatever the cutoff is now. So does it have as high of a return on investment for rich families? Probably not. Like probably $6,000 when the kid is born isn't going to make that big of a difference to them. There is the argument that it does reduce the stigma for getting this cash if it's available to everyone, potentially increases the political support if it's available to everyone, and makes it administratively easier to do if it's available to everyone. That's the case in Flint, right?
To administrate, I suppose. Yeah.
If you don't have to jump through a bunch of hoops to prove that you are sufficiently poor, which is the case like for lots of other social welfare programs like food stamps or Medicaid, you know, you have to document your earnings to show that you qualify, which requires more bureaucracy. That can also save money, depending on how efficient the bureaucracy is, because it means that you're not giving out the free food or whatever to people who don't necessarily need it. This baby bonus program, it's called RX Kids, by the way. I should give a shout out to the name. This version in Flint, you just have to prove that you live there. You get either a debit card or a direct deposit in your bank account, and that's it, and you spend the money however you want. You don't have to like show up at the, you know, local social services office for an appointment and bring paperwork and stuff like that every few months. It's just like you're in the program, you get it for 12 months, and then you're out. So it is administratively lighter. Now, if it's at the federal level, it's going to be the IRS doing this, most likely. And I think under Harris's proposal, it would be the IRS. That's who administers the child tax credit today. And do I think you're going to get all of the same like warm and fuzzies that you get in Flint, where people feel more loved and more hopeful and all of that stuff? I don't know. I don't know that the IRS is like, it doesn't have the same amount of charisma and warmth as Dr. Mona does. So I think, in Flint, they're like having baby parades and stuff like that. Like they're it's adorable. They're doing all of these things in addition to the cash to try to
make it work.
Make it more family. Like this is a city, again, that's known for poisoning its kids. They're trying to rebrand their city and as more family friendly and also like help the people who live there feel much more supported than they have been. So there are some things that translate. Some lessons or takeaways that translate to the federal level, some that probably don't. And it'll be interesting to see how these replication programs in like Kalamazoo and the Upper Peninsula that I was talking about in Michigan, how well those work out, you know, if they don't have the same local leader. I'm sure they found other leaders in those places who maybe are equally as connected, but probably it does matter who you have stumping for the program and evangelizing for it. At the national level, I still think it's very much worth doing. And I think that there is potential for there to be a bipartisan agreement on this in the sense that Republicans have been trying to rebrand themselves as not just pro forced birth, but pro life. And
what's a forced birth without some support for the baby that was born?
Exactly.
Well, the new softer Republican Party.
Well, J.D. Vance, when he's asked about people being forced to give birth, you know, to their rapist's baby or whatever, he'll answer with a response along the lines of, well, just because the conditions of the pregnancy, you know, of the conception were inconvenient doesn't mean that the kid doesn't matter, you know, whatever. It's like,
yeah, I've heard him say that.
Yeah. But at the very least, like, we should make it easier to raise a family and reduce costs for families. So like, if you actually took their rhetoric at its word, which may be foolish, they should get behind some kind of expansion of the child tax credit and maybe specifically this version. And part of the reason I think this baby bonus idea could have particular bipartisan potential is that all of those worries, criticisms that you hear from conservatives about, well, won't just giving families more cash discourage work, right? That's one of the big reservations. I think it's possible. I think that the possibility of, you know, people working a little bit less is completely outweighed by all of the benefits of giving them cash to bring their kids out of poverty, because most people will continue to work because it's not enough money to live off of.
That's right.
But there's still this like debate over, well, is it a work disincentive if you give people cash with no strings attached, if you don't require them to work, blah, blah, blah. And that's why there are reservations on the right about doing a refundable version of this, meaning that you can get the money, the child tax credit, whether it's in its current form or this bigger version, if you have no earnings or very low earnings, what Democrats want to do. They want to make it fully refundable. If you're very poor, you still get the cash because your kids still need it. Republicans say, no, if you have no earnings, you shouldn't get it. We want to require somebody to work. There's a big fight about that. However, there may be kind of a sweet spot here because we're just talking about the baby's first year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like people don't really expect moms necessarily to go back to work right away or to have some minimum number of earnings right after the kid is born. We don't give people paid time off by, you know, nationwide anyway, by law. We have some protections to allow them to take unpaid time off, depending on where they work.
Does J.D. Vance's wife, did she get time off, do you think?
I mean, she was working for a big white shoe law firm
in San Francisco that had daycare for the kids.
I haven't looked into her specific employer's policies, but I would guess.
That's what I understand.
At a firm like that, they have probably pretty generous paid leave. In their case, so she was able to take time off and not go earnings free during that period. I don't know, but that's for someone in that career, that's pretty expected. J.D. Vance has talked about how his mother-in-law, his wife's mother, has provided a lot of free childcare for the two of them as well.
And that's a model that he'd like to
well, I mean,
expand.
When he's like made fun of people for saying that they want more affordable childcare in the past. And it's like, well, how come it's okay? You know, like, why don't you want other people to have what you have? You know, you have your mother-in-law. When he's been asked about what should we do to help people get childcare, he has literally said, like, have you thought about asking grandma? It's like, no, that never occurred to me. You know? the reason why people need help and, you know, maybe more expansion of existing private childcare programs is because they don't have a family member that they can turn to. So, you know, J.D. Vance, like, is all over the place when it comes down to, like, what pro-family policies he actually supports. But he has said, if not expansion of childcare, he has at least said that he would support some version of an expanded child tax credit. Now, whether he would get behind, like, a $6,000 newborn baby bonus, as I've been calling it, I don't know. I don't think he's commented on that specifically, but I could imagine others in his party, like the Marco Rubios of the world, for example, Josh Hawley's, people who say they want the Republican Party to be more family friendly. They might be able to get on board with some version of this.
So who's going to win the election?
Oh, God. I don't know.
You nervous?
I'm extremely anxious about this. It's getting closer, and I think it's still a coin flip. And it's like, no matter what new horror we are exposed to with Donald Trump, it doesn't seem to make any difference. Like I said, I think certain things are either helping Kamala Harris or at least hurting her less, like maybe people getting more acclimated to the economy, you know, the prices or whatever. But it's like somehow Trump still has all of his support.
I think this dark stuff is actually, there's an audience for that.
Well, there probably is. Yeah. Or at least a large audience that doesn't care. I saw Chris Sununu, the governor of New Hampshire, who I used to think was reasonable.
And he's still for Trump.
He's still for Trump. He was asked about it today on CNN. He was asked, like, what do you think of this reporting saying that Trump praised Hitler's generals? And Sununu's response was something like, well, you know, I think it's all baked in at this point. People are used to hearing Trump say crazy things. And it's like, it's baked in that he's pro-Nazi? Like,
well, you know, his generals tried to kill him. So, and Trump obviously didn't know that because he wanted his generals to be like Hitler's generals. But, well, good luck. We'll know before
too
long.
Good luck to America. Yes, exactly.
Good luck to us all.
Yeah, I agree.
And thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week.
The greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at LEGENDZ.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.